We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, James Anderson, and we're going to kind of keep a dynasty theme here going. I got my buddy Eddie Almaguer here from Prospects Live. Eddie, how you doing?
Oh, man, James, it's been a while since I've been on the RotoWire podcast, and I feel like I'm still kind of shaking off that offseason rust. I know, you know, people like yourself like jump straight into like 1,000 NFBC leagues. I'm like, I need to decompress for a little bit, but I think this will make this podcast the start of my baseball offseason. I'm ready to talk a lot of topics.
Well, your approach sounds healthier than mine, but just can't stop it, man. It's been a I feel like there's already been sort of different phases of my off season. Had the major redraft itch, and now I'm just really into dynasty stuff. That Highlander draft we did on, yeah. Or well, you were sort of participating in on mm-hmm. Saturday. That really kind of got the juices going for dynasty for me. For sure. So, exciting time of year. We've had a ton of the big ticket free agents have already signed and signed kind of in the past week or so. I wanted to talk briefly about the Trey Turner signing with Philly and just sort of see if there's any kind of fallout here before we get into some more sort of dynasty specific stuff. But just what were your general takeaways from that move? Do you view it as a neutral move or step up or step down?
It's neutral with a slight lean toward slightly depressed value now. I think the first thing people think of is like, what do the parks look like? I think Dodger Stadium and you know, and Citizens Bank is just are kind of similar for the most part. I think Phillies plays a little bit better for home run, a little bit better for triples. So like that's good for Trey Turner's kind of, you know, especially triples and a little bit more juice from the right side. But I think that the reason I think it's a slight step down is because of the lineup for the most part. You can't replicate the Dodgers lineup. And especially with Bryce Harper missing about half the season next year, sounds like I'd expect maybe like 85, 90 runs instead of 100 and maybe like 75 to 80 RBI instead of like, you know, I think he got like 100 last year with the Dodgers. So we might have seen a career year for Trey Turner last year, mostly because of the lineup, thanks to the Dodgers, and because the Phillies won't be able to replicate that. Probably step down. And it's interesting because right now he is – just barely the number one overall NFBC player in redraft league. So I wondered, you know, do you think Julio Rodriguez may or Acuña leapfrogs him now as we move forward?
You know, the common name I've been seeing is Jose Ramirez because of the position eligibility. Everyone sort of has realized third base dries up so quickly that they like kind of getting that third base spot taken care of if they have the number one pick. But I think it's an interesting year for the number one overall pick. Cause yeah. I definitely think you can go in three or four different directions. I think Acuña and J-Rod both have great cases. Outfield isn't super deep. So, you know, nothing wrong with filling your outfield spot there. Shortstop is probably the deepest though. And I think that's sort of led to sometimes people pass on Trey Turner, even though he is, you know, very, very safe from a power speed standpoint. And I think your point about the lineups is pretty fair. I mean, this is about as good of a lineup as he could have gone to. I mean, the Bryce Harper absence obviously is going to kind of dampen things in the first half. But I think if you have Trey Turner in Dynasty, for instance, or you took Trey Turner in Redraft, this is this is great because he probably wasn't going back to the Dodgers. You're right. I mean, you're not going to be able to replicate Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman at the top, but it's a deep lineup in Philly. As you said, I don't think people realize just how hitter friendly Dodger Stadium has been.
It is, right?
But yeah, I think kind of a neutral park shift for him, and
he was always going to go to a team that has a good lineup. Right? The A's or the Marlins aren't vying for Trey Turner, you know.
right. Is there any other? You know, I think this definitely kind of. If you were hoping that Gene Segura would go back to Philly, this kind of rules that out.
Now the A's and the Marlins might go after Gene Segura. yeah. He's kind of like a non. I mean, like we're like a 10-10 guy. Which you know, I was looking at his line and at his years, and man, I forgot a few years ago he was a 20-30 guy. Gene Segura. That's kind of crazy to think. He posted that line once. Now he's kind of like a shell of his old self. Yeah, and then you know. In our notes, like you mentioned that, with Bryce Harper gone, there will be a little bit of shifting once he comes back because you expect maybe like Schwarber and Trey Turner kind of are the 1-2 or, you know, in some capacity. And I was wondering who might be like Hoskins, Ramuto, Castellanos, who kind of gets the boot once Harper goes down. And yeah, initially I thought Hoskins, James, but he hit second for pretty much most of last year in the Phillies. And they've shown with Schwarber kind of leading off that they value someone being able to get on base. So maybe like Realmuto and Castellanos are the ones that drop down once Harper comes back. So with Castellanos probably leading the way.
Yeah, I think once – and it's tough to even look that far ahead, right? Because they might trade someone like Rhys Hoskins. One of these six guys might be injured or one of these five guys might be injured when Harper comes back. But if you just assume that they keep everyone's healthy when Harper comes back, Castellanos is probably hitting sixth. And I think the toughest call is whether Hoskins or Realmuto is hitting fifth. It might be Realmuto, but I don't think you're dinging Realmuto much.
Yeah, especially the way he finished 2022 gives me hope there's more left in the tank. If he had kind of finished the way he started, I'm like, okay, this just might be the beginning of the end here for my guy.
Yeah. Are you buying a bounce back on Castellanos at all?
Not really. I think he's one of the guys that's kind of fading down. And I posted a poll a couple of days ago where it was like, whom would you prefer to roster, you know, Chris Bryant or Castellanos? And it was literally kind of split right down the middle, maybe like 51-49 mm-hmm. Castellanos. And that was funny. That's kind of the same choice I was making about a year ago when we were doing our initial Highlander draft. Castellanos was one of those guys I was considering. Went with Bryant ultimately. Seems like nothing has changed, just for the worse for both of them.
Yeah, I mean, Castellanos is probably a better bet for 550 plate appearances than Bryant, but Bryant's got some other edges there.
But do you want Castellanos getting 550 plate appearances?
Oh, well, yeah, season, he's got to be a compiler, you know. Yeah. You need him playing as much as possible. What are your thoughts? I have no idea what your thoughts are on this player, but Bryson Stott. I was sort of very low on him, I think, relative to most people when he was a prospect like this time last year. But I think he's, and it's, I just didn't really see a ton of ceiling there, but I kind of like him for redraft right now, just because he is one of those guys that could get you double digit homers, double digit steals, qualifies at a couple spots, decent lineup, but now he's going to be probably hitting eighth, you would think, or seventh or eighth, something like that.
I think in the redraft world, he's going around the 14th round in FPC. So I was looking, honestly, his projections are not too dissimilar to like Gene Segura. So it's not as exciting as maybe we want it to be. And I wonder if maybe you and I might've been in opposite directions here. Cause I was more excited for him as a prospect, especially me. I love prospects with good OBPs and hasn't mm-hmm. really come through yet. And now it's like, okay, like this might take a lot longer than I realized. It's not immediate success. At least not even like walking as much as I would have wanted him to kind of cling on to something. So like, even in this range, like, you know, Conforto, Ashby, like Trevor Rogers. I prefer those guys in sort of in the redraft context. In Dynasty, like, you just kind of sort of got to hang on a little bit. But I will temper my expectations as to relatively where they were like a year ago. So I'm definitely a little lower on him than I was about a year ago.
Yeah, I think one of the nicest things about Stott for Dynasty is just that he, I think he's very sort of safely in an everyday role there, that middle infield. I mean, that's going to be a pretty good. I mean, having Stott as your everyday second baseman, that's pretty good defensively, and they obviously have a lot invested in him based on where they took him in the draft and stuff. So I think the everyday playing time there, the park, solid points for Stott in Dynasty. But I think you're right on redrafted. It is tough. Like, I liked him a lot more in redraft when he, like, the very beginning of redraft season when he was going a little bit later. Okay, let's talk about the Highlander draft from this Saturday for anyone who's interested. We did a live draft of that. Jesse Roach did a lot of the heavy lifting on that episode. We had a bunch of managers from the Highlander Dynasty Invitational hop on to discuss their pick. That was a one round 20 pick redistribution draft for the Highlander Dynasty Invitational, which you and I are both in. What were your kind of takeaways from that? Because I know you weren't able to participate live, but you sent Jesse some pretty detailed, I don't know if it's a cheat sheet even does it justice there. But what were your takeaways?
I mean, did you get a chance to see it? I mean, he could have. I know he was hesitant to share my order on air. He could have done it without any problem. I told him you should have done it because I think some of the fun of that was seeing how people are stacking up their like rankings evaluations, because it really was kind of a free for all in terms of like, man, like how is this going to be valued? My top five were Andrés Giménez, Tyler Glasnow, Carlos Correa, Vinny P, and Will Smith. I was hoping at least maybe one of those would squeak on by, maybe Correa, maybe Will Smith, because the catcher, but ultimately ended up with Chris Bryant, who was 10th on my initial list. I picked 11th. So, I mean, it's kind of it is what it is. It's fine. It's fine with me.
Right.
I'm still kind of hoping a little bit for that bounce back from Chris Bryant, but I'm kind of being optimistic here. I obviously roster him. I think what I learned here from our Highlander draft, James, was like the first 12 picks is kind of where you want to be to get something of value. And then diving deeper, maybe the middle of those first 12 picks. So like picks 5, 6, 7, 8, that's where you kind of want to be, because you can appropriately plan to take someone who falls, but if not, you usually have like the guy you want at that point. And I think there were only a couple surprises for me. One was Anthony Volpe being selected off of Cross's list,
right,
by Alex Sanchez. And I was like, wow, like you had Glasnow, Andrés Giménez, and Christian Javier to choose from. And like, you go with Volpe. And it makes sense. Like, you know, I looked at Alex Sanchez's team afterwards, and he's definitely skewing very young. I mean, he traded for Elie Dela Cruz, and he's obviously playing to kind of have a young core. But to me, I mean, you know, I had Andrés Giménez ranked first. That would have been my choice right there. So Eric got lucky. I guess he must have paid off Alex before the draft to take that. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, I'd love to get Cross's take on that, because I think it's, and Alex, I think I just yesterday traded Alex Tristan Casas for Aaron Ashby, essentially. So he definitely has a, you know, get the young hitters plan that I think makes sense for his roster. But he might have been one of the only people in the league that would have gone Volpe off of that roster. And props to Eric Cross for having a few kind of high demand players there to choose from. But Glasnow was actually my top guy available. And so we each had our top guy available from Cross's roster, different guys, and neither guy got taken. That's interesting.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, and sorry, Giménez Glasnow was my one too for the Highlander draft. And yeah, it's Cross also getting his team. Like he still needs a few more pieces, and thankfully none of these guys were spared. I think he kept Dansby Swanson as his third guy, and I maybe would have gone Andrés Giménez, but I mean, it's just the beauty of it, different valuations for each person. I think Teoscar Hernandez went a little higher than I anticipated. He was maybe more like in my 15 plus range of ranking, but you know, Michael Waterley acknowledged a little bit of homerism for that pick, so I get it. Other than that, there was nothing like that really stood out or surprised me too much. Definitely a lot of fun. Well, I mean, Drew Wheeler going Seiya Suzuki, I would have told him like no one would have picked Seiya Suzuki, in my opinion. But I know Drew Wheeler has a lot of love, to put it lightly, for Seiya. But yeah, I think last five my last like five picks of the Highlander definitely gets a little dicey. I'm now seeing it's good to know that those picks maybe don't carry a lot of weight now, because I mean, Roddy Saleh, CJ Abrams, Ryan Mountcastle, Drew Jones, like nothing earth shattering in my opinion there. So good lesson to take forward as we trade for these Highlander picks moving forward. Definitely want to. I'm glad I hung on to mine. I was tempted to trade it a couple times throughout the season. Not that Chris Bryant's like a thing I'm championing around, but I'm okay with it. By the way, I actually had, before Chris Bryant, I had Framber and Altuve right above him. And those are the two guys that went right before me.
Okay, so I sniped you.
Yeah. You and Jesse.
Yeah, Framber was sort of, that was sort of a worst case scenario for me. I definitely had my sights set a little higher there, but can't really complain too much there. It's interesting to me that Jimenez was your top player. The projection systems would agree with you. Steamer says 19 homers, 17 steals, 267 average. I think if he gives you that, he's worth where he's going probably in drafts. And as a 24-year-old who's got that projection, a clear everyday job, I think it makes sense to have him prioritized for Dynasty. I think Chris Vargas maybe mentioned during the live draft that Jimenez was someone that he would have wanted there. What do you see, you know, is 2022, can 2022 be Jimenez's, you know, almost career-ish year, but him still be a good buy? Do you see room for growth there still?
Yes, I mean, if it's cool, we can jump into that kind of that Wander Franco poll that
Yeah, let's do it.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
Yeah, so I posted a poll a few days ago, and this is just me curious because we're working on our dynasty list over at Prospects Live. We're going to release the top 1,000 sometime this month. And as part of it to help kind of curate the list for each ranking our top 100 MLB only. And I realized I really like Andrés Giménez to the point where, like, in my first edition, I had him above Wander. And I dropped him a little bit, figured out it was a bit too much. But he's inside my top 30 overall for, like, MLB only bats, and, or rather MLB players. So pitchers and bats. And in the poll, it was, whom would you rather own, Wander Franco or Andrés Giménez in an OBP dynasty? And, you know, Wander Franco took about 80% of the votes, which is not surprising at all. Makes sense. Uh-huh. And Giménez is actually a little bit above Wander Franco, like 3 or 4 spots in redraft and NFBC. And I think for dynasty, it makes sense. Like, if you've probably held on to Wander Franco at this point for 3+ years, like, you're not going to want to trade him after a lackluster season. But I don't know, man. I'm going to record and going to record saying that, like, a year from now, that gap is not going to be like 80-20. I think it might be like 60-40, maybe closer than that. I'm just really bullish on Giménez. I think there's a legitimate chance that, like, each of these next 3 years, 2020 is in the cards, with the fallback of, like, a, you know, 17-16 season, which certainly doesn't have the sexy, you know, sexy sounds of a 2020 season, but he had modest but noticeable gains in the power department. And I think what I like about Giménez is it's not just one big thing that changed. It's like, he lifted the ball a little bit more. He barreled it a little bit more. He chased a little less. He whiffed a little less. So, like, it's like a small combination of small things where he improved, and it's all added up to a really nice season. And I think, one, he's a good defender. So, like, his glove will be in that lineup. And he, I think he had, I think, like, fewer than 550 plate appearances last year. So, if he gets like 620, 630, he, just by factor of volume, I think 2020 is in play, right? So that's kind of why I'm into it. In OBP leagues, I'm buying it, like, you know, about 340 OBP roughly. In average leagues, I think he's also a boon, 270, 280. So this is a guy I'm chasing quietly but hard in my dynasty leagues. I don't want to kind of show my hand like maybe I am right now to the world in this podcast, but I do like Andrés Giménez a lot. So that's why he was my number one guy in Highlander. And that's why I think the gap is not that big in dynasty. You know, the age is there. I think the production is there. He's not going to leave that lineup because his glove is good. So that's my pitch on Andrés.
Yeah, no, I find a lot of that compelling. You know, Giménez right now, I think it's a good time to buy if you are bullish. It's fine to, you know, you could call it buying high. But if you think, like, he's not getting valued by most people like a guy who you can sort of pencil in for around 2020 going forward. I think there's still more risk kind of cooked into his price tag. I mean, if everyone in the redraft community thought he was going to go 2020, his ADP would be around 50, right? So there's definitely enough skeptics out there that he's not being fully priced to kind of the player you're describing. So that all makes sense. I find Wander Franco just to be so fascinating because he has this, you know, he has the pedigree and the name value to sort of, you know, maybe people that don't follow prospects as closely as I do, or you guys do at Prospects Live, you know, it's sort of, well, Vlad Guerrero was the number one prospect and the number one international signee. And, you know, you had guys like Soto and Acuna, and like Wander Franco's like the next one of those guys. So obviously you should expect, you know, big gains from him as he, you know, turns 22, turns 23. But I think he's just, what makes him so fascinating is he does not have loud tools, really. It's the hit tool. It's the approach. The, like, massive, you know, it could be an 80 grade hit tool, right? But power, speed, just nowhere near those other guys we're talking about.
Right. And that's my argument. Like, that's why I think it should be a little bit closer than maybe that poll indicated. The thing with Wander Franco is you always have to leave the room for the possibility that one day it's like, you know what, I'll let my strikeout rate climb to like 18-19% and I'm going to trade it in for 25 home runs. Because, like, his hit tool is so good that he can honestly make that switch and hit for power if he wanted to. So it's That can happen at any point, any season. We've seen these kind of small dudes with extremely good hit tools just flip the switch and just turn to power. But yeah, I mean, like if you look at the numbers, like his average exit velocity is not great. Like he doesn't really barrel the ball too much. So it hasn't shown up yet. But again, he's young, but it's not like he's supposed to be adding muscle either. He's kind of already kind of compact with a good build, and he's been that way since before he debuted. But with Wander, it's like you said, James, the counting stats that we kind of find sexy in fantasy just aren't quite there. And I always think back to probably one of the biggest, you know, egg in face moments for Prospects Live was when we went and kind of bucked the trend and put Jared Kelnick above Wander Franco in one of our prospect rankings. And obviously that looks really bad in hindsight, but
you just had the wrong Mariner.
The wrong Mariner, right? But I think our argument there was we had gotten numbers back then that like his exit velocity and was not good, and like where's the power coming from Wander Franco? So while our end result was poor in putting Kelnick above Franco, I don't think like we were that far off base as to like, okay, like what's going to be the attraction here to Wander outside of like hitting, you know, 300 plus each season.
So what would be because there are people out there that like just do not follow prospects that closely. No, Wander Franco was the number one prospect, and basically just by having that information, they sort of think that there's this upside there that, you know, he could reach. He could break out and reach that this year. What would be a stat line? Like, let's just do batting average, home runs, stolen bases. What would be a sort of high-end stat line that you would sort of say is his kind of realistic ceiling for this upcoming season? Like, not 99th percentile outcome, but maybe, you know, 90th, 95th percentile outcome.
For 2023 only?
Yeah.
I would say maybe, like, let's call it 22 home runs, call it, like 16, 17 steals, you know, hits 315, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
I don't know if you asked for anything else there, but
no, that's, yeah, I think that's kind of exactly sort of where I'm at on it too. Cause it's the 315 average. If he's hitting for that high of an average, the 22 homers seems like a very fair cap. And then if, like you said, if he wants to go for 27, 28, 29 homers, you're not getting that 315 average anymore, probably.
And I'm looking right now, and that's not too far with the exclusion of runs and RBIs, home run steals and average to what Freddie Freeman did last year. 21 home runs, 13 steals, 325 average. Came with, you know, 117 runs, 100 RBI, right. But... that's not too far from those numbers.
So yeah, if I think there's, if he just does that, or even if he just goes, say it's 315 with 20 homers and 15 steals, everyone who selected him where he's going right now will be able to say like, see, got him, number one prospect. You guys weren't believing in him. And like you said, the Freddie Freeman comp, it works for those three stats, but it doesn't work for the other two stats.
Right,
like,
right.
Yeah, that's part of what makes Freeman so great is the being in the Dodgers lineup, you're getting just a ton of runs in RBI. But I think, you know, Wander Franco's steamer projection of 16 homers, 10 steals, 287 average, I think that seems right on to me for a projection system on him. So I think what makes him so fascinating to me for Dynasty is that the best thing about him is just how high his floor is, but there's not a ton of room between his floor and his ceiling, really. You know, with a lot of these guys, it's just, well, where's the floor? But think about the ceiling. If this all goes right, like if he checks all these boxes, the ceiling's just massive. But with Franco, the best thing about him in Dynasty to me is just how high the floor is, given that he's still just 21 years old.
That's well said. Small gap between the floor and the ceiling. And I'm looking at some of the guys around him in redraft, like Vinny P's going one spot before him right now. I think I'll take Vinny B, kind of like 10 out of 10, if I'm being honest.
Mm-hmm.
Gunnar Henderson, I think I'll take Gunnar Henderson, who's a couple spots below Wander Franco. I mean, of course, it depends on like how much average risk did you take before. Like if maybe you took O'Neill Cruz for some reason, maybe you want Wander Franco like the next round. But yeah, I think he's more of like, hey, I need average, like come on board. Like so I don't want to be treating a player inside the top 100 as like, I need this already, you know, like more like give me the upside of what you can do as opposed to like come save my team already.
Yeah, it's very much about roster construction in terms of why I'm just not really that interested, because, you know, if you're just like, I need a guy that's going to lift up my batting average and we're in round 7 of the draft, what did you do with those first picks to the
point? How did you screw up?
like your batting average should be a strength at the point in the draft where Wander Franco's getting selected. And I mean, you could just take a Jeff McNeil or Luis Arraez 200 picks later, or probably not 200 picks later, 150 picks later, whatever. But yeah, I just, batting average is not something I'm really chasing in the early rounds of a draft from like a batting average only type of guy, right? You want to take your first round pick should help your batting average. Your second, third, fourth round pick, they should all be guys that are hitting for a decent average. Maybe went like Otani, pitcher, Jazz Chisholm or something like that, and your batting average is not amazing. But very few instances for me where I'm looking at Wander Franco where he's going. Yeah. And then the shortstop aspect too. Like we were kind of talking about with Trey Turner. I mean, it's the deepest position.
It's fair.
So where is the gap? Are they right next to each other on your dynasty rankings, Franco and Jimenez?
I'll tell you right now. Jimenez is Wander Franco 25, Gunner, Chisholm, Jimenez.
Oh, nice. Yeah, and Gunner. Gunner's where do you sort of see Gunner's batting average? Obviously for OBP, I think he's a bit more valuable than batting average. Where do you sort of see his batting average though this year?
Yeah, and then for context, our rankings will be OBP. I think we're supposed to be able to flip a switch and turn it to average, but we are ranking with OBP in mind, so hence the Gunner aggressiveness there. But average, yeah, I mean, I think I could see like a 265. I think Gunner is someone who's shown that he can adjust fairly quickly. So like 265 might be the neighborhood we're looking there. So I don't think he'll be a drain, kind of right on at, you know, above average nowadays, I guess we consider 265. So not a concern I would have if I'm drafting him, to be honest.
Yeah, I mean, Gunner could steal more bases than Wander Franco, and he's qualifying at third base, which is a big difference there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, give me Gunner's potential 20 home run. Steamer's got him at 22 home runs, 10 steals, 255 average, right? So give me that. I'll trade the average for like the upside of more home runs and more steals. Because there is a scenario where I can see Gunner hitting more than 22 home runs and maybe stealing more than 10 bags. I mean, he stole 20 something in the minors last year. It is minors. They got but you know, there are new rules this year, right? So curious to see how that plays out for his speed. Didn't really run much when he came up last year, but I'll take Gunner's upside over Wander's is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and you know, long term, I don't know when it'll be, but I do expect Gunner to be a 30-plus homer guy eventually. So, and I don't expect Wander Franco to be a 30-plus homer guy. Let's jump into. I asked you to do a little bit of homework here. Really appreciate you taking the time to do that, but I'm going to have you give the listeners three players that you think people should be targeting in Dynasty this offseason. And it can be prospects, it could be big leaguers, old big leaguers, young big leaguers, it could be a first-year player draft guy, whatever you want. So why don't you give me your first player that you think people should be targeting in Dynasty this offseason?
Andrés Giménez. we'll consider that a bonus. So that's my big leaguer there. We'll go get Andrés Giménez. You heard why already. Some of the people who listened to Prospects Live in the last month and a half or so, we did a somewhat similar podcast, so they may recognize this. Brady House is actually a name that I think people should consider going out to get. Brady House, you know, he was shut down with back injury in late August. In late June, he went on the IL with a shoulder injury. And like in May, he got an injury that I dug and dug. And I didn't find out what happened to him in May, but he left. Like he stopped playing for a bit. Before that May injury in 2022, Brady House hit 326, 408, 449. After that, rest of the year, 230, 303, 299. So, but one of the things I'll be referencing, James, in this list is part of our Prospects Live Patreon. We have what we call our data-driven rankings. And with the help of Tyrann Alexander, we basically have different on a 20 to 80 scale, we ranked average EV, 90th exit velocity, zone contact rate, chase rate, WOBA, ex-WOBA for pretty much every single minor leaguer. Like, this is stuff that isn't public, available to the public. You can't find it on Fangraphs. So you'll hear me reference that. So if I say like someone has like an 80 grade, 90th EV, that just means like they were one of the best in the minors when it comes to like 90th EV. So just some context for the listeners there. So despite how poorly Brady House did overall in the season, he still had a 60 grade, 90th EV, an average zone contact rate, chase rate a little bit below average, kind of 45 grade more or less. But I think the important thing to keep in mind is if you have a player who's hitting the ball hard and he's making contact in the zone, those are the two biggest factors to me right now to success in minors. So if you compare, this is kind of an eye-opening for me when I looked into this, 2021 versus 2022 power for Brady House. 2021, 90 miles per hour average exit velocity, 105 miles per hour 90th percentile exit velocity, and a 70% contact rate. 2022, 82 average exit velocity, 82 miles per hour. So dropping down from 90 to 82, dropping down from 105 90th exit velocity to 101, but still maintain that 70% contact rate. So to me, this is someone that just screams like, hey, like, this was all injury that kind of screwed up your year. I think the upside of a 30 home run bat is still easily there with like an 825 OPS. He's supposed to be healthy for spring, but I mean, I will acknowledge I'm not a fool. Like, injury concerns are not like a real risk with Brady House. But I think he ended up around like 99 or 100 in our Prospects Live October top 500 update. And I was a little bit higher on him than that. So for me, Brady House, someone that I would go out and grab. I think the upside is still there, especially when, you know, when he was drafted, he performed really well last year. Kind of the helium really went really quickly for him. So that's my first name, James Brady House. I think injuries really dinged him up. And we've seen the power. It just sapped it last year because of it.
Yeah, I really like the call on Brady House because there you have to dig beneath the surface stats from last year to kind of get the full picture, as you were saying. I mean, he was someone who I think I want to say I entered the year with him kind of in like around 75th overall or so on the prospect rankings. And then after he just got off to that awesome start, I bumped him way up, probably top 40 or so. And he deserved it based on what he was doing at single A before the injuries. And so now he's been out of sight, out of mind. He played long enough through whatever was ailing him, back injury or whatever. He played through it to the point that he kind of tanked his numbers a little bit. So now you have that slash line and that isolated power and the strikeouts and walks. It looks like it was just kind of a mediocre season for Brady House at single A, but like you said, when he was healthy, he was playing like the super high pedigree high school shortstop that he was entering the draft. So I love that call.
Yeah. It's just, to me, I think this is an easy buy low in Dynasty. I mean, you want to sometimes target players that something was obviously wrong with them. Here was the injury, and like the pedigree has been high. So this is a chance to maybe buy in. If it works, then I mean, I guarantee the price you pay right now is going to look silly, you know, if he does well. And if it doesn't work, then you shouldn't have been paying that much to begin with.
Yeah. And he's an especially appealing target if you are a rebuilder and if you're lucky enough for House to be on the roster of a contender, because he is, you know, 3 years away probably. And so if you're a rebuilder, I love the idea of trying to buy low on him this offseason. All right, who's your second player that people should be going after this winter in Dynasty Leagues?
This is absolutely no surprise coming from a Prospects Live person. Kobe Mayo, I think, is a name that I'm not going to quit. He was someone who we were pretty aggressive with in like the first half of 2022 on our top 500. He was like top 35. Finally relented a little bit because I finally dropped him a little bit. I think he ended up 49 in October. And I think it's kind of like a tale of two halves here for Kobe Mayo. And in his high A debut, you know, he had great power, slugged almost 500. We have our RoboScout tool and Patreon, and he ranked 84 for his RoboScore, which is pretty strong. It's on a scale of 1 to 100. And then he kind of got the bump to AA. Not great, 250, 331, 398. So the power kind of left him. But what I like about Kobe Mayo is that he makes more contact than you might realize given the average. And again, shout out to Tieran Alexander, who released an article about best fastball hitters a few weeks ago on our main site. Kobe Mayo has a 91% contact rate with a 41% hard hit rate in the upper zone against fastballs. And that's the best in all of the minor leagues of that combo. Like, no one hit the ball harder with that much contact in the top zone against fastball than Kobe Mayo did. And to me, he just crushes flat fastballs. So like, and that's fastballs with like a induced vertical break of like 18 inches or more. And that just means he's built for today's game. You know, pitchers are throwing at the top of the zone with their flat fastballs, and Kobe Mayo eats those up. Now, all right, where does he struggle? Kind of the bottom of the zone is his issue. Pitches, you know, breakers and stuff. He doesn't really perform well, but he knows how to lay off them, right? So going back to those data-driven rankings and that 20 to 80 scale I mentioned before, 60 grade, you know, in his 90th exit velocity. He's got a 55 in zone contact and chase rate. So he still hits the ball hard and he makes contact in the zone. And to me, I think he just turned 21 or is about to turn 21. So I don't think we should lose sight of the fact that his poor AA performance should hinder him that much. To me, it opened the window, if anything. And I generally think there's still a top 20 upside here. I'm like so in on like pretty much every single Orioles bat, given how well they're developing them there. So Kobe Mayo, give him to me all day.
Yeah, man, it's I like this call too. It's interesting because I saw Eric Birdland on Twitter, who I think represents the Orioles in the annual Prospects Live mock draft. I think he was having a back and forth with Eric Cross yesterday, and he said he has Mayo as his number one prospect in the whole system, if I'm reading his tweets correctly, which I respect that take and that confidence. It's just such a loaded system. I can't go there on that. And I hope I'm kind of understanding his tweet correctly there and not misspeaking, but it is just really impressive how well a lot of their, you know, the guys they've invested a lot in terms of draft capital, how well they've developed those guys so far. I mean, it looks like I think Jackson Holliday looks like a future superstar. Couser and Norby have developed about as good as you could hope. They look close to helping out. And Mayo is sort of a forgotten man. And you can look at, and his stats don't jump in the upper levels the way that Norby's and Couser's do. But you have to remember, this is the prep bat and those guys were the college bats, and they pushed him really aggressively last year. You know, I think many orgs would have just left him at high A probably, but I do like that call quite a bit because it's always nice to trade for a player when at the last level they were at, there's some kind of uninspiring statistics.
Exactly. I mean, listen, the Orioles like bats who don't chase, hit the ball hard, and make contact in the zone. So, like, that's kind of like the common thread between a lot of their prospects once you kind of look at it. And Kobe Mayo does all three, right? So he doesn't chase, he hits the ball hard, and he makes contact in the zone. So this is, it reminds me a little bit, and I'm not saying he'll turn into Gunner, but it reminds me just Gunner Henderson, I think, what was it, 2021. There was a point where like we were high on him and then he really struggled. And we're like, damn, like Gunnar Henderson we planted our flag on him hard in early 2021 and he's kind of letting us down a little bit here. And then he just turned around big time. So to me, this is like Kobe Mayo, like he's right now where Gunnar is, like where people are kind of down on him a little bit. Yep. And I think there's a big future coming. So to me, another Kobe Mayo, another name you should be trading for.
Yeah, that's a great call. Or great callback to that, to when Gunner did kind of have that one lean stretch. What's your prediction for, because we're talking about all these O's guys and a lot of them are close. What's your prediction for sort of, let's say 2024, pre arrival of Jackson Holliday? Who is their everyday second baseman? Who's their everyday shortstop? Who's their everyday third baseman?
I think Gunner stays at third. He's a really, really great defender at third. So I think he sticks there. That leaves basically Norby. I think Norby probably comes up and then he becomes a second baseman. As for shortstop,
it's kind of, you got Mayo, Westberg, and Ortiz.
Westberg. Now you got me thinking, because Westberg isn't the greatest defender. He might shift to a little bit of a utility role. I like the bat, and I actually like the bat a lot. But I think because they're kind of stacked up, like Gunner can be a shortstop. He's a better third baseman though. So like I'm thinking logically, like they maybe want the glove where it's best, but then maybe you think if Gunner can man short, they maybe take that trade off and maybe put like Westberg at third and like move him around a little bit. So you do have Ortiz. I feel like you know more about Ortiz than I do, James. I know you're a little bit higher on him. I like him as well, but 2024, man.
Well, you know, probably one of Ortiz or Westberg ends up in a utility role. And then I guess what I was sort of getting at is like, is Mayo going to end up at first base / DH for them?
I could see that. I mean, I could see that. I mean, because they'll still have some. I wonder if Santander will be still under contract. He might be on the tail end. He might not be on the next great Orioles team.
They'll probably flip him before he hits free agency, I would guess. Okay, so we've got, loving both these calls so far. We got Brady House with the Nats. We got Kobe Mayo with the Orioles. Who is the third player that people should go out and get this offseason in Dynasty?
I'll throw out an FYPD name. Nothing crazy here. I just kind of want to maybe push up his ADP a little bit more here. Dalton Rushing from the Dodgers, catcher. Fantastic debut. Nice little voice crack there. Going from full season, I mean, just I want to reread these numbers. Again, super small sample size, 28 games, which is just so silly. 424 average, 539 OBP, 778 slug. Identical walk and strikeout rates at 16%. He just had a really monstrous debut as a 21-year-old. And again, calling back to those data-driven rankings, 70 grade on the 90th EV, hits the ball really, really hard. 50 grade average zone contact. So again, hitting the ball really hard and making contact at an average rate inside the zone. A plus on chase rate. So he chases less than average. And a plus on how often he's swinging in the zone, right? So like, again, we have a prospect who swings a little bit more often than usual inside the zone, doesn't chase. When he's swinging in the zone, he's making average contact. And when he makes that contact, it's going really far because he's hitting it really hard. And it's a simple kind of 1 + 1 = 2 for me with Dalton Rushing. And I think we were working with one of our patrons in one of his private chats. And I think he said he got Dalton Rushing a few weeks ago in like the mid to late 20s. And I was like, that's absurd. That's what an incredible price that is. I have him as, I think, 14 or 13 in my personal FYPD rankings. So to me, this is a bona fide first rounder. And if you, for some reason, want to trade out of like maybe you pick 4 or 5 because you maybe won't get one of the prep guys, trade down to like 10, 11, 12 and aim for Dalton Rushing. I think he's ranked 80th on our top 500 from October. And he'll probably hang around there come February. But I'm all in on Dalton Rushing, man. Really, really good. I'm not really worried right now about, okay, how does he fit with Diego Cartaya and like Will Smith? You know, like that's just not like a problem right now that I'm worried about. I never draft about like, oh man, I need some pitchers in my farm. Like, no, like just don't worry about the position your players and your farm system are playing. Just draft the skills. So Dalton Rushing, last name.
Does that So I think I'm probably least bullish on the Rushing call of the three. I really, really strongly endorse the first two. I think when it comes to catcher, I'm not trying to have four or five catching prospects on my dynasty team. I could easily roster four or five good catching prospects every season because they pop up and they're the people are slowest to grab the catching prospects because if you're an active dynasty manager, you're going to have probably a quality big league catcher, at least kind of like a top 12-ish, top 15-ish big league catcher. And then, you know, last year alone, you could have scooped up, depending on the depth of your league, you could have scooped up Andy Rodriguez. You could have scooped up Logan Ohapi. You could have scooped up Edgar Caro. You could have, you know, get Dalton Rushing in the second round of a FYPD. Do you have a problem rostering more than, you know, two or three catchers in a dynasty? Because, like, in my experience, it's hard to trade those guys and get fair value.
Yeah. So maybe I miscommunicated. So I'm not a fan of like rostering a ton of catchers. Although we're in a little bit of a catcher renaissance right now. But what I meant was within the Dodgers org, like, I'm not worried about like how like Cartaya versus Rushing is going to shake out, you know? So, but yeah, like as principal, I mean, listen, I hate catchers, right? So I don't like catching prospects, but I do acknowledge that tide has shifted a little bit over the last 2 to 3 years. No, I'm not trying to roster four or five guys. And like, if I have a good one, like I have Diego Cartaya and like Tyler Soderstrom in one league. And now Soderstrom probably not going to be a catcher, you know, more than likely not.
Right.
But yeah. I'm like, okay, I got Cartaya. I'm good. Like, I don't really need, like, I'm not trying to seek Dalton Rushing in that league. I'm not trying to seek Logan Ohapi in that league right now. So yeah, I agree with you that when it comes to how many catchers you roster, I mean, keep it to one or two for the most part. And if you got a surefire catcher, then you can forget about that position for a while.
Yeah, and it obviously depends, you know, if you're starting two catchers, maybe you want two ones you can roll out with confidence that are in the majors, and then maybe you have room for a third who's a high-end, high-upside prospect. But once you know, if you're, like, I think I'm in one dynasty league where I have, like, I just picked up enough good catchers to the fact that I do have like four now, and you just can't get anything in trade when someone looks at your roster and sees that you have four of the top 18 dynasty catchers. You're just not going to get a ton when you try to move those guys, so
they just become sweeteners in trades at that point,
right? And I mentioned this on the Saturday podcast, but I do think with this catcher renaissance that we're seeing, especially, I know that there's probably people that play in, you know, 15 team, one catcher dynasty leagues. I think there's going to be a point, if we're not already there, where starting one of your catchers in a util spot is going to eventually start making sense if enough of these catching prospects kind of perform at the level that we think they will. There's just going to be situations, I think, in dynasty leagues where it's a viable move to be starting two catchers, even in one catcher league, just because there is such kind of an influx of talent at that position.
That's fair, and I hope I never to be doing that.
Yeah, no, it doesn't sound fun. All right. Now let's get to the three players on the flip side that you think people should either be sort of trading or fading. You know, if we're talking about a first-year player draft or a startup dynasty draft, fading and then trading for established leagues and stuff like that. So who is the first player that you would be advising people to kind of be shopping or staying away from this offseason?
This one's always a little tough because, right, the way I look at it, you know, you ask me, like, who are some players you want to be buying? I just open my dynasty leagues. I'm like, yeah, like, I'm glad I own this guy. Like, you should go get him. But, like, you don't want to look at your team like, man, this guy sucks. I wish I could get rid of him, right? So, but I did do that with one of them, and that's Giancarlo Stanton in our Highlander draft. So, you know, rostering Stanton right now is a little scary, especially in an average league. You know, last year he took a huge – it hit, like, 221, I think. Mm-hmm. And to me, that was – 2022 was the first real step toward his, like, career decline. I'm not questioning the power has gone anywhere. I think he's still like a potential 30 home run bat with like 130 games. But give me someone like, you know, Matt Olson, Springer, even like Santander or like even Rowdy Tellez over like Stanton at this point in an average league. So I think if you have Stanton, especially in an OBP league where he still has some value, more value than an average league at least, like look into moving him. I know power was a little bit down across the league last year, so like there is some value in rostering his 25 to 30 home runs, but he's a little bit of a headache to own. He will get injured, and ultimately you can probably still bank a little bit on the name value for Stanton and get someone that shouldn't be a step down, to be honest.
So I've ended up with Stanton in a couple draft and hold. Actually, no, I think a couple gladiator leagues. I don't mind him for redraft, but where do you sort of see? And I mean, you're definitely right. You know, 211 average last year, 297 OBP, pretty big steps down from what we've been accustomed to. And he actually, you know, he was about as durable as you could hope for Stanton these days, 110 games. But, you know, he did have a 227 BABIP, which is extremely low for him.
And he started off really hot, too. So, like, if I'm looking, like, you just kind of this arbitrary endpoint here on the Fangraphs game log, but starting in mid-May, for example, from mid-May to the end of the year, 174, 283, 422. Mm-hmm. Rough finish for my guy.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, we're looking at, you know, he had a 240 XBA. Steamer has him for 247. I assume you're taking an under on 247 for 2023.
Yeah, I'll take the under. I mean, it may not be by much, but that 220 dip was big. I mean, the contact rates went down a little bit. I mean, to levels that they have been before. So it's not the first time he has like a 66% contact rate, but it is a little bit of a dip down than when it was the last couple of years prior.
Yeah, I think of the names you mentioned, I think Rowdy Tellez, you could probably turn Stanton into Rowdy Tellez in a decent amount of dynasty leagues, I would think, because with Stanton, you know he's going to play when he's healthy, given the contract, and he is still, you know, he's de-juiced ball proof. He's one of the three guys, you know, like you've got Jordan Alvarez, Aaron Judge. Stanton is probably top five in terms of just doesn't matter what baseball it is. He can still hit it out to every corner of the park.
Would you, I mean, am I wrong in thinking that in a dynasty league, you can trade for Rowdy and like expect a little something extra?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I think if you can find a match where the person who has Stanton is clearly in win now mode, or the person that would be acquiring Stanton is clearly in win now mode, I think it would probably make sense for both parties. Maybe a little something with Rowdy, but yeah, I think that's a fit that might be out there for some people.
Okay, cool.
All right, so who is the second person that you think people should be staying away from or trading this offseason?
This would have been about a lot more, I don't know if shocking is the right word, but like just a lot more like, oh, really? As it is right now, I think everyone's kind of on this right now, but Robert Hassel is just a name that I think you should move this year.
get what you can for him.
Yeah, trade. Yeah. I've been off the Hassel train for a few months. I don't think he's more than an average player, is to be honest. He's outside of my top 60 at this point. I think going back to the data-driven rankings I've been mentioning, it's just 50s across the board for Robert Hassel and, like, you know, average EV, contact. Like, even his contact rates that are supposed to be the carrying thing for him weren't so great last year. Just to give you some I moved him, like, I think, like, summer of last year and in a 20-team OBP league. And I moved Hassel and Trevor Rogers back when he was in the struggle bus for Zach Veen, Jordan Westberg, and a first for this upcoming FYPD. So it hurt to move Trevor Rogers because I love Trevor Rogers, but I was happy to move Robert Hassel for like someone like Zach Veen and Jordan Westberg. So just Hassel's just an average player. I mean, he'll be okay, he'll be fine, but I don't think there's any sort of star upside with him.
Yeah, I haven't quite gotten this far yet in terms of solidifying my sort of big update to the prospect rankings that'll go up in late January. But I've got Hassel at 45 right now. I can guarantee he won't be top 50. Let's see. For instance, I don't think you could probably pull this off. I would take Sal Frelick 10 times out of 10 over Robert Hassel. That might be doable, depending on what rankings the person is kind of looking at. Are there any other names that sort of prospect names where you could see the consensus still being on Hassel, but you would make the swap for a different, would you trade him for Emmanuel Rodriguez?
Oh, that's not even close. Easy, man. I'm really high on Emmanuel Rodriguez. I like
how about,
top 30 high.
How about Dustin Harris?
Let me I'm gonna tell you right now, I'm gonna pull up my own rankings within our top 500 here. So Harris, I have 84 and Hassel at 65. So okay. It's close. I might take Harris at that point. Here are some names I personally have above Hassel. Sure.
Yeah.
Let me see, Tanner Bibee I have above Hassel. I have Colson Montgomery, I have Harry Ford, Adell Amador, obviously Kobe Mayo, Gavin Cross, Jason Dominguez, Connor Norby, Wesper, Rokio, Jackson Mero. All those guys are above Robert.
I think that Mayo is actually a really good name because I don't think you could do this. I would think you could maybe do that swap in maybe 50% of situations.
I think you can easily acquire Mayo for Hassel and maybe like get a little bit more, maybe like a pick, a mid round pick somewhere, mid draft pick as well. You know, maybe like Mayo and maybe, like a third.
Yeah. I'd probably start the offer out there, but I'd probably just settle for a straight up swap if necessary. That's a good sort of range of players and a good list of players out there for people that want to, and nobody wants to sell low, but you kind of look at Hassel. I mean, I suppose he could have a rebound next season after like a full off season to kind of get accustomed to his new team. But I mean, that run he had at high A with the Padres last year is doing a lot of the lifting in terms of if you want to be high on Robert Hassel, because
I in that same league where I traded him away that year prior, I traded for Robert Hassel. I think it was pretty much, I mean, if I'm maybe remembering, I think it was literally just I moved Robbie Ray for Robert Hassel. And when I was kind of like tearing down a little bit, and I was like, oh, hell yeah, like I got Robert Hassel. I remember being excited, you know? So, like, and now it's like, well, I moved him for what I could.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you don't want to just give him away for some guy that, you know, is kind of almost a replacement level prospect or something like that. But, I'm with you there. All right. So who is the final guy to get off of this offseason?
How about a guy that I think almost nobody rosters yet, and Masataka Yoshida? I'm calling for one of the MPB imports to I'm just not interested at all. This is anyone not familiar, coming over from the MPB, he's an outfielder, lefty bat, 28 years old. I think he'll be 29 next year. And his numbers on the MPB look good. You're going to pull him up, say, oh, wow, he hit like 21 home runs, and he hit 336 with a 449 OBP, and he, you know, slugging over 500 for like the last like 4 or 5 years. But to me, this is someone who he's going to come over. He's going to have an excellent average. I think the bat-to-ball ability is truly excellent. But everything else, to me, is just going to be lackluster. And we're going to be looking at someone who maybe hits like 280, 290 and has less than 15 home runs and doesn't run too much. So we've talked a little earlier about some of the guys that's just not really interesting to me at this point. Give me some of the upside. And he's more of a guy that you pick up to fill a need at this point. So I don't have him ranked quite yet in my next dynasty update. or rather prospect only update, but I expect he'll be outside the top 100. And I know he's a ready-made big leaguer, but I just think the upside isn't there for Yoshida. So if you happen to roster him, consider moving him before, like, we see the performance come the regular season. I've officially pumped the brake, James, on some of these imports. I was definitely in on, I'm blanking. Who was the one last year that came in? It was Seiya, but was there someone else? I forgot.
Are you thinking about like Ha-Seong Kim from a couple years ago?
It may have been Ha-Seong Kim. Yeah, I was definitely in on Ha-Seong Kim. I was definitely in on Seiya, and both of those guys have let me down. I mean, they excel at some other things, but when it comes to the fantasy realm, I'm now in the prove it to me first, and I'm okay being late. I'm okay then having to buy high if I need to, mm-hmm. but I will pass on them if the price is too high here.
Yeah, I usually am hands off on the Asian imports when they come in. There's somebody or maybe a few people in my leagues that are more excited, and it's just I think it's okay to just admit that you don't necessarily know and to kind of be agnostic on some of these guys, because there's just so much that goes into making that transition, and it's so hard. You know, anyone who is just looking at video from a year ago on these guys and looking at their baseball reference page and trying to tell you that they're extremely confident what this player is going to be, you know, it's kind of BS to me. So I'm with you on that. Generally, I will say on Ha-Seong Kim, I was all the way out on him for first year player drafts, but I'm kind of actually all the way in on him for redraft right now because of how cheap the prices. And I think I was getting a little worried when there were rumors that could be a Trey Turner destination, but Kim is just a really, really good defender, which I didn't think would be necessarily part of the equation with him. And if you project full-time playing time for Kim this year, he gets to double-digit homers, double-digit steals pretty easily. And he's got a pretty nice duo of shortstop and third base eligibility. So I was completely out on Kim, and now this offseason I'm in. So maybe this will be one of those things where I should have just stayed out the whole time and it ends up looking bad. But you can get him late 200s right now in redraft. And so I don't mind that price. And kind of like you were saying, I'm okay just missing. Like, if someone's going to come over and just be awesome, I'm okay missing on that, but just because you're low on one of these guys when they come over doesn't mean you can't get back in once you see something. I mean, kind of same thing with Seiya Suzuki. I wasn't really on him last year, mm-hmm. but I thought he was impressive when I saw him play in 2022, and he's definitely going to hit in the middle of that lineup. So I think you can kind of adjust on the fly, but I don't really like buying in kind of blind on these guys.
Yeah, I can see the appeal, right? So let me spend a draft pick rather than, oh shit, this guy is good in April. Like Seiya Suzuki was, if someone traded for Seiya Suzuki at end of April, they probably paid a pretty nice price for him, right? And then that kind of turned south. And I think one thing that maybe is often forgotten is the gap in fastball velocities in the MPB versus major leagues. It's like the MPB has an average fastball of like 90 miles per hour, and I think it's like 93 now, approaching 94 mm-hmm. in the majors. So that's huge.
It's such a different game.
So yeah. That's a big adjustment, and that's kind of the reason why, you know, you see someone hitting 20 home runs easy in the MPB, like, well, all right, let me cut that in half for the majors.
Right. Yep. Okay. So we got the three buys, we got the three sells. It's time for the final segment of the show. We'll be keeping going with our ADP segment here. We got the 15th round of NFBC Draft Champions ADP. So far, we've done the 11th round, 12th round, 13th round, and 14th round. So I'm going to read out the 15 players who have an average ADP, or an average ADP, who have an ADP of the 15th round in the NFBC, and then Eddie and I will each pick a guy that we are buying and a guy that we are selling at the cost. So we got Jack Flaherty, DJ LeMahieu, Trevor Rogers, Anthony Rendon, Bryson Stott, Lars Nootbaar, Danny Jansen, John Birdie, Gene Segura, Christopher Morel, Reed Detmers, Sonny Gray, Jose Berrios, JD Martinez, and Ramon Laureano. All right, Eddie, who is the player from this group of 15 that you are buying in the 15th round?
I was between two names here. I'll go one, and then after you reveal your second name, maybe I'll toss a third one.
Okay,
if you
want to pick
by you. I'll go with Lars Nootbaar here.
Ah.
for the buy here. Man, I mean, the Cardinals just keep producing these outfielders, and Nootbaar, I think, is low-key someone who, if there was some way to, like, place bets on, like, you know, steamer, like, projections, right on Fangraphs, I would push the over hard on, like, what is not what his line is. I think 18 home runs, 7 steals, 247 average is what he's kind of pegged for now. But
yep,
I could easily see this being a 25 home run bat come end of 2023. He's someone that, if you remember, like, there was a big article on him from Driveline earlier this year, of how he went there and he improved his swing speed. And swing speed is something that I don't know if a lot of people realize is so impactful to your impact at the plate. And just because it's one of, like, the last frontiers of stuff we don't have, like, data on, at least on the public side. But he added 8 miles per hour to his swing speed. And that's the difference of hitting the ball 35 feet further now on average, right? So every time Lars Nootbaar puts the ball in the air now, it's going 35 feet further than it was before he did the whole program. So for me, just overall, Nootbaar, I think, is just someone who might be on the cusp of, like, a really strong breakout. And on that swing speed kind of ball on the impact, compare his 2021, which is only 58 games, to his 2022, 108 games, but jumped up average EV 89 to 91 miles an hour. His max EV 109 to 113. His barrel rate 4% to 12%, right? And all while maintaining contact at the same pace. So Nootbaar, I think, we're headed for 25 home runs. And if he hits near the top of that Cardinals order, which he's, I think, roster resources has him at leadoff. I don't know if that's going to be the case to begin with. But if he does end up at some point in the year hitting in the top half, that's going to be very fruitful.
Yeah. Nootbaar would have been my pick as well. One of the nice things about playing in co-managing a dynasty team with Eno Saris is that I hear about stuff like that Driveline trip before it's written about sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so as soon as Nootbaar came into playing time last season, I added him pretty much everywhere. And it was solid. It was a solid run, but he did get unlucky with that 228 average. Mm-hmm. I think we're kind of just talking about Seiya Suzuki. I think Lars Nootbaar is kind of 90% of Seiya Suzuki this year, and he's going, I don't know, 5-6 rounds later.
That's a good call. I would definitely take Nootbaar over Suzuki this year.
And he might be, it's funny, like, whenever I talk about Jordan Walker and just kind of, you know, where does he fit into this Cardinals lineup? Like, who's the player that's kind of on the outs? And you start talking about the Cardinals outfielders, I feel like Nootbaar is the one who's most locked in, which is kind of weird to say when you got Dylan Carlson, former top prospect, you got Tyler O'Neill, who was, you know, getting drafted in the third round a year ago. Nootbaar being sort of the most locked in, the most steady of their outfielders there is interesting. I don't know. He did play 12 games in center field last year. He might have to move to center if they want to do a Tyler O'Neill, Jordan Walker at the corner outfield spots and kind of demote Carlson. That would kind of leave Nootbaar having to patrol center. But yeah, I think 20 plus homers, he could flirt with 10 steals. And then, yeah, if he's leading off, obviously you don't want him getting platooned. But he was playing pretty much every day for good stretches of the second half last year. So I'm not that worried about that one.
Yeah.
All right. So I got to pick someone who's not Nootbaar. So of these 15 players, the ones who I have shares of so far are Trevor Rogers, Bryson Stott, Nootbaar, Danny Jansen. Okay, so I'm down to I think I'm down to Danny Jansen and Sonny Gray here. I'm going to say Sonny Gray. I know that he's not a good bet to get you much more than like 140, 150 innings. But he was excellent last season when he did pitch. And I think he finished quite strong. In this range, this kind of caliber pitcher here, there's no real sure things. Like I think that he's about as safe as any pitcher that you're going to be able to get from the 15th round on, from just a how they will perform when they're healthy standpoint. And I think it's an okay team context for getting wins. I think if you get more than 140 innings, it's a nice profit. And even if you just get 130, 140, I think it's fine. So I've been ending up with a decent amount of Sonny Gray in the middle rounds.
Trevor Rogers would have been my second pick. He's someone that I like, so we're simpatico there. I'm kind of surprised you didn't go with your boy Reed Detmers. I thought it was a slam dunk.
Well, I love Detmers. I almost mentioned him. The reason I didn't go with Rogers is just I think you got to expect kind of like 7 wins, something like that.
True.
So tough to only get 6, 7, 8 wins from a pitcher you're taking this high. I do think he bounces back in a big way. So I do have some Rogers, and then I do have some Detmers. I hate the fact that you're probably not getting any 2-start weeks out of him.
Fair.
Yeah. That's kind of the knock I have on the Angels pitchers, even the ones I like, but this is a fine round to get sort of SP4, SP5 guys. I co-sign going after those guys as well, but I like Gray a little bit more. All right. Who is the guy that you're fading from these 15?
This is a super easy call for me. It's DJ LeMahieu. You know, I get it. Maybe he hits like 270, but like you're getting 10 home runs, maybe. Playing time might not be there the full way. He's not going to steal you anything. This is like about as empty as it comes, to be honest. And it's not even like empty batting average, because like it's like the batting average is not that great either. So this is a simple, like, what are you actually giving me here? So DJ LeMahieu, you know, 34, easy call. I just dudes on the decline.
Yeah, I totally get that. You just don't. I mean, if he's only playing 3-4 days a week, he's basically unusable.
Yeah.
So I've got a few guys to choose from here. Actually, you know, a few guys that I'm just completely out on.
It's just like uninspiring guys, right? John Birdie, Gene Segura.
Yeah,
right?
I mean,
it's just the guys are like, you know, do I really want to pick these dudes?
Yeah. Okay. I wanna talk. Talk junk about a bunch of these guys. I think I'm gonna. All right. I think I'm gonna say John Birdie. I'm out on Flaherty. I'm out on Rendon. I'm out on Laureano. But I'll go with Birdie here because you're obviously taking him for one stat, and it's the stolen bases. But do we know that he is playing every day out of spring training? And if he opens the year in a utility role, how long are you holding him for these steals? And then if you took John Birdie in the 15th round, trying to get 25, 30, 35 steals, how does that impact how you drafted the rest of your team? Because if you're taking him there, you need those steals. And does that mean you're not chasing speed later because you're banking on the 30 steals you have from Birdie? I don't like it. It's throwing a wrench into your whole build. It's great when you can add him off waivers and get those steals that way. But I think taking him in the 15th round is just a huge mess.
Yeah. And you got to also consider, like, with the changes to the bases and how you know the pickoffs next year, like if steals as a whole increase, it therefore makes John Birdie's value decrease a little bit, because by just nature of things, like, more guys will be stealing bases. Therefore, you don't have to rely as much on those single category ones after.
Yeah, I think I'm very hesitant to make any sort of predictions about how the stolen base rules impact stuff, but my guess would be that it helps the guys kind of in the middle. Like, it helps Vlad Guerrero get to 15 steals, or helps Freddie Freeman get to 18 steals, or something like that, versus it helping John Birdie get to 50 steals.
And there was also, I'll never forget it. Shout out to Rob Silver. Good follow on Twitter. Very smart dude. He, I think for RotoWire, one of the RotoWire magazines 2 or 3 years ago, James, and I never forgot it. It was an article where it was like the cost of taking those speed only guys and how that impacts the rest of your categories more than you realize. So like, it really brings down like your home run, your ability to compete in home runs in the top three and RBIs, et cetera. So I've always had that in the back of my head when you think speed only guys. So yeah, I like the, I had the Birdie call, and we confirmed that you hate the Marlins with Rogers and Birdie there. So,
oh man, okay, yeah, that was a great article by Rob, and I mean, he came on the pod last offseason and was dead on about fading Miles Straw, and I think I made a pro, or not a take Straw, but I made a, I'm not crossing him off my list. I think there's a time and a place to take Straw, and Rob was of course dead on with that call.
Hey, Miles Straw versus Tommy Edman was a conversation last offseason, believe it or not.
The Tommy Edman slander will not stop. It just won't stop. All right, Eddie, why don't you let people know what we can be looking for from Prospects Live, Prospects Live Patreon here in the coming weeks.
Yeah, man. Plenty of items here. Appreciate you giving me the chance to spotlight it here on the Prospects Live Patreon. So just kind of, for those not familiar, you know, prospectslive.com, the main site, very heavy on MLB draft, very heavy on just like analytical prospect articles. The Patreon side of things, that's where we do all the fantasy stuff. And it's, frankly, to be honest, it's what helps us pay like the rest of the staff at large, right? So that's where kind of all of our, pretty much most of our money generation comes in. So appreciate any support for there from current patrons. I'm sure I know there's a crossover here, James, and any maybe future new ones. But this month we have the top 1,000 dynasty list dropping. This is something that I've been promising for like over a year and a half now, and we're finally making good on it. It's combining minor leaguers and major leaguers, top 1,000, and this is being spearheaded by Jordan Rosenblum. He's using a lot of formulas, a lot of statistics, a lot of math to help create a foundation, and then we then as a team, me, Dylan White, Drew Wheeler, Matt Thompson, come in and then help mold it a little bit ourselves. That's a big offering for this year, or for this month rather. Next month, top 100 FYBD ranking, top 500 update prospects in February. And if you missed it, last month we released the data driven rankings by Tieran Alexander, where it's data that's not public. Again, we don't have the specific numbers to show you, but we do have that 20 to 80 scale. So extremely, extremely useful. There's some names on there, especially younger names that you have not heard about that you don't want to have on your watch list heading into 2023. We have the Batter Comp Tool by Dylan White. Really cool tool where you can kind of plug in a player's name, his season, and see who are some people historically, like dating back to 2008, that mirror what this prospect is doing. And finally, we are in the middle of the top 30 reports being released. These are the scouting reports, not fantasy driven. They're like full on, like kind of, you know, quote unquote, real life baseball. That's being spearheaded by Jake Kearns, our scouting director. We released all of the AL West. We're wrapping up the NL West right now. You can find the top 10 for free on the main site. And if you want the full 30 reports for each team, that's at the $5 level at our Patreon. So a lot of stuff, a lot of content. We try to give you the most bang for your buck as possible. And this is where you kind of insert the cliche quote about the cost of a Starbucks coffee per month.
Yeah, definitely a great time to support everyone at Prospects Live. I am a very satisfied patron, and I think you definitely won't regret it if you sign up over there. Lots of good stuff to come this offseason from those guys. And Eddie, I really appreciate you taking the time to hop on with me.
Of course, thanks, man. So much. Thanks for the invite.
Okay. I'm going to be taking next week off from the pod, but I think Todd Zola, Lord Zola, is going to hop in and pinch hit for me. So look for that next week.